Well, historically speaking, Station to Station had a certain nuance. Remember, he had just come back from that whole blue-eyed soul young American
thing. Right.
And so there you go. You have this image that you've just created. Remember, the spiders have already dissolved. Everybody's talking about the chameleon, blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of expectation. So here we go into the studio, and during those days, everything got plucked from the air. You get called off the road, and you get thrown into the studio. What are you going to do? I don't know. That's crazy. So that album had this aura around it.
Energy.
Yeah,
aura.
You have to be able to come up with something because you got to follow young Americans. Well, the experimentation started, and it was just unbelievable. Why? Anything went. Do you know, you realize that we did, I mean, look, here's a funny thing. The introduction to Station to Station.
Oh, I love that.
Do you know how long that damn thing is?
That's almost like a song in itself, right?
I'll tell you.
But I love that.
Yeah.
It builds and it
builds.
It builds,
it builds. And then it goes to all these three or four different songs. It's like you're smashing. And look at the intensity of the album. There's only like six or seven cuts on that album.
Right, right.
I mean, it's a highly unusual scenario to think about. Why did that happen?
So who came up with that intro? Was that a combined effort or the guitarist? Or
well, I do the rhythm section.
Yeah.
So Bowie
and Earl Slick was on that too, right?
Yes, Earl Slick came in as overdubs. We have a scenario that we always have with Bowie during those years where the rhythm section would always work first. So you would have the bass, drums, and guitar, and then Bowie would decide who were the invited guests, lead guitar, keyboard, etc. So when Earl came in, we already had the rhythm tracks already done, so Bowie and him worked together, you know, painstakingly for the, you know, all that feedback and all that stuff
that was going on.
So, you know, he had to work heavily with Bowie to try to get it. Because it was, I was there. It was a little hard for him to understand the concept of a, what, five-minute feedback?
It's kind of
crazy.
Yeah.
You know, sticking your head inside the amplifier and sticking your guitar inside the speaker. That's kind of... But he was able to do it. Earl was, you know, rose to the challenge.
And what guitars did you use on the album?
Well, always the Alembic, the Maverick. I just had Maverick made over at the Alembic company. They're known for the basses. But I heard Stanley Clark's bass and the tone. I was like, how can you get that much tone out of a bass? Usually a bass is all boomy bottom. You know, Fender precision.
That's true.
And suddenly here you got this man piccolo type of sound on a bass. So when I found that they had those active pods, I was like, I need one of those. And I needed it. And this is another thing. When Earl Slick was playing all that feedback and stuff, you're talking about Marshall amplifiers.
Yeah.
How? What am I supposed to have, a twin reverb to play rhythm against a Marshall stack? I had to come up with a totally different system
to match the
power. So, yeah. I had Limbic cabinets made, and 12-inch, and a Gauss 15-inch subwoofer, and then a tweeters on top. It was a gigantic system I had to have built. The Guitar Center in California built me this system around the Alembic guitar, around Maverick.
And the writing of fame, which you mentioned earlier. I mean, how did that whole process?
That was a totally different scenario in that fame was not really fame. Fame was really foot stomping that Lou Reed had done. And we did that on the tour, on the second part of the Diamond Dogs tour.
Sure.
And so he liked it. But when we went into the studio, it lacked luster. It didn't, you know, some songs work on stage but do not work in the studio. Well, that's what happened to Foot Stompin'. So then Harry Mathlin, who was then doing that, he cut it up. And Bowie, he cut it up into more like a bluesy, what we call 1-4-5-4 formation.
Right, right.
And it had more substance. It kind of got to the point. Otherwise, it just drone, and it was boring. And so I came in and started doing the overdubs. You know, Lennon came in, dropped an acoustic guitar track on it.
Nice.
You know, Bowie left, came back with the lyric, and that song was, you know, that was a totally, totally different scenario than the one that we had with Station to Station. Remember also, Station to Station came on the heels of The Man Who Fell to Earth. So you notice there's this little nuance, a little, like you look at the Thin White Duke And then you look at the character that he played on, you know, The Man Who Fell to Earth, you know.
And he was Ziggy Stardust way before that, but
so
yeah.
Have, you know, you have these amazing correlations of characters, you know.
Did he take on different personalities when he went into these different characters off stage, or not really? He was the same?
Well, that's all, you know, let's call it the necessity of theatrics.
Right, exactly.
Personality? Yeah. Was it wholehearted?
Yeah.
Did he drop it like a brick later on? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
When he was Ziggy, he was Ziggy. But when he did Fame, where was Ziggy?
Right, exactly.
I mean, he killed Ziggy.
Exactly.
Oh, he killed him. He killed him dead.
What do you mean by that in
by
terms
that
of...
Was, there is no Ziggy in the Young Americans album.
Right, right.
Ziggy was really a memory when Station to Station happened. You know, and the crooner... I mean, yes, he had Word on the Wind.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say you had Wild as the Wind on Station to Station, which was a Johnny Mathis song way back,
no,
I think.
Actually, it was...
I heard Johnny Mathis do a version
no,
of it.
That, well, there were a lot of people
yeah,
doing
yeah.
the version.
But you mean the original?
Nina Simone
okay.
was the one that he thought was the emoting, soul-wrenching version. And yet he sang it more like Anthony Newley.
So, great, man.
Again, when you say the personality, you really have to become the personality, or else how are you going to believe it? I mean, if you don't believe it, and that's the type of person, it's like when he did The Elephant Man. You have to be you have to have convictions about the character that you're about to unfold and develop.
Definitely.
And if you can't explain it, you can't defend it.
No, 100%.
And so when he's planning his tours, he becomes who he has to be in order to get that tour.
Yeah, he has a business-like approach, a very successful approach. Yeah.
Well, you know, let's put it this way: it's organic to him. It might not be organic to us. We don't think out of the box like. As readily as he does,
but he's always had such great live bands. Your tenure with him and other live bands, he always picks the greatest people.
I was always shocked in the almost over 30 years that I've been with him that I was always called back.
Oh, that's great. That's
it's
a compliment
kind of
to you. Well, of course, musically speaking, that's probably a point.
Well,
but if you think how you relate to him also as a person or just musically speaking?
Well, you have to.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, look at it this
band
way.
Situation.
Five guitar players. They all play equally well. And let's put it this way. They could all kind of give, no doubt. So what's going to make him choose one guy above the other?
Definitely.
Who would you rather spend a year and a half on the road? This serious guy or this other guy who's always smiling
right.
and laughing? Well, I genuinely have a very cheerful outlook, and the smile is not fake. I'm approachable and a real person, so I felt that my character and my personality had a lot to do with it. Of course, I did have a good skill set, and I have good work habits. I'm called upon to keep feeding him as many ideas as I can, and then he can pick them like Chinese food, one from column A, two from column B. And as long as
very
I keep coming up with stuff, and remember, as a guitar player, I got to come up with signature lines. I can't just play something somebody else plays. Every one of those lines that I have to develop in order to do, you know, the introduction to Stay, the introduction to Goldie, all these things, this signature guitar, which is what was classical in our day. It was a classic response. Dun, dun, da, da, da. Without that guitar line, you don't have satisfaction.
Exactly.
Every
of course, Rips. Jimmy Page with
everybody
a whole lot of love.
Line. Yeah.
I was gonna ask you early guitar influences. I mean, is it hard to pin down a few? Is too many to mention?
No, it was just a little bit more obscure. Django Reinhardt, Gabor Szabo.
Wow. Reinhardt's amazing. What he did with the two fingers and the thumb, right?
Yeah.
Incredible.
It's just that it's, you know, I had a different type of influence. You know?
Wow.
So it was. I listened to groups like Cold Blood from San Francisco.
Wow.
Now,
so
I was into. We were the opening when I was young. We were the opening act of Sly and the Family Stone at the Apollo Theater. I had already done James Brown and all that stuff.
Oh my God.
But at the same time that I'm listening to I'm Black and I'm Proud by James Brown, I'm also listening to Steppenwolf.
Oh, great,
you know,
music.
I'm I'm a Peter, Paul, and Mary guy, but I'm also Earth, Wind, and Fire. So I have this rich musical culture that allowed me to, as a chameleon-like person,
yes,
morph with David. And so he never really had to think about me. Whether he wanted to do New Age, I could go there. He wanted to do R&B, I could go there. He wanted to do rock, I could go there. So
that's great, the versatility that you have as a guitarist. That's very important. Yeah.
Well, David was always kind of shocked when I would finish the tour, and he looked at my resume and when did you have time to do Cyndi Lauper or Bette Midler or Simple Minds or you know, any of these bands? Because I'm a session musician, and when the phone rings, you know, it's a really strange thing. I don't ask for nothing. The phone rings, and it's Paul McCartney's people wanting me to play on their record.
Which one was it?
Press to Play.
Oh, Press to Play, sure. Yeah, okay. Excellent.
Oh, there's all these.
You know, you do good work, and then your reputation starts to follow you in that way, too.
Yeah,
and that's what you get.
But again, I didn't make any phone calls.
Well, that's great.
When Mick Jagger wanted to leave the Rolling Stones and do his own record, I get a phone call from Mick Jagger. I need for you to come into the studio secret and, like, nobody needs to know, but I need you to write with me to do this. You know, I did Lonely at the Top.
Okay, yeah,
you know,
wow.
I co-wrote that. The
Pretenders.
You
I like
know,
that
when
song.
The Pretenders came out, I did some stuff with them.
Excellent.
Oh, the Close. What's the name of the Pretenders album? Get Close.
Yeah.
Light of the Moon. So I'm all over the place, but I'm a well-kept secret. Nobody knows. If they look at my resume on YouTube, or I mean on MySpace, it's just like, damn. I mean, if you had a quiz, nobody would know it was me.
Do you like that? Is that a good thing?
I love it. I love it. You don't want to. I never wanted my face on the front of the cover of the Rolling Stone. Why? When I was young, I saw James Brown. He couldn't eat. Chuck Berry, he couldn't go anywhere. Luther Vandross can't even walk in the street. David Bowie can't even have a cup of coffee. So I knew that very early on. So you know what? Not for me. I just want the gig. I don't want the publicity.
Excellent. This is great. I just got one more for you. So what's going on musically speaking right now? Any projects? Anything coming up?
Well, I just finished doing up Alicia Keys' new album. That stuff that you're hearing on the record now, that's all me. I just got I'm now the Distinguished Artist in Residence at Stevens Institute of Technology. I give master classes there, and now I have a great position. I'm opening up a Robert A. Moog synthesis research facility.
I just interviewed Keith Emerson recently, and he spoke about Moog, what an influence he was on him, of course.
Yeah.
And he was one of the first people to use that live.
Yeah.
It was used on record before
definitely.
That.
And what I want to do is with all these brainiac kids that go to that university, I want some experiments in sound coming out of that university. So opening up this room, getting this position there,
wow,
and working with the Bob Mogul, I'm going to get some major experiments going and influence the industry in a technological way. I'm very all over the place and very busy.
Good for you.
Yeah. 40,
excellent.
50 years in the business. I'm 60 years old and I'm still happening.
Wow. You look great, and that's a credit to you, you know, that people love your work and want to call you again and again and again.
Well,
that's great.
I'm a happy guy.
Good. It's been a pleasure. It's so great meeting you. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thanks.